You are listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time on SQPN.com, the StarQuest production network, leading the way. This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. Create your own website or blog with a .com domain name for just $6.95 per month. Go to SQPN.com and click on the Bluehost banner for more information. And by the Amazon store. Shop at Amazon by clicking on our Amazon link at SQPN.com, and your purchase will help support our show. Welcome back to another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, the podcast in which we try to go into detail and analyze the hidden layers of this fantastic show on ABC, and now also aired in other countries in the world, called Once Upon a Time. It's all about fairy tales and, well, the meaning that is conveyed by fairy tales. And as we heard in the first episode of the pilot episode of Once Upon a Time, stories and fairy tales are important. They give people hope. They make people hope for, you know, happy endings. And all that, of course, is in jeopardy in Storybrooke because of the evil queen. And now we're all trying to figure out how everything will get back to normal again. And so today we're going to talk about the episode True North, which chronicles the adventures of Hansel and Gretel, as well as additional adventures of Emma and the Evil Queen. And now we have the Blind Witch. Fascinating stuff. And to help me analyze this episode, we've got two of our panel members. Lisa, are you there?
I am here, Father.
I'll try to up your volume a little bit and lower the sound of the background jingle, which is very, very loud. Still don't have a proper setup here, so sometimes I'm, you know, the balance is a bit off. Also joining us today, Deborah Shaben. Hey, Deborah.
Hey.
Let's, before we start with this episode, True North, there's some feedback from our listeners, and you've been looking at it. What are our listeners saying about us?
Okay, so we got a rather lengthy letter from Marissa Tyson. And I don't know if I'm going to read the whole letter, but I'll definitely start and see. Dear Once Upon a Time fans, debaters, and speculators, having listened and thoroughly enjoyed your podcast, I've decided for once in my life to email back. Oh, that's nice. I noticed that there are a lot of getting into what the characters tend to do, but a lack of why. As the only defender of Regina, I find myself getting too much into her character. First off, there is this thing where, no matter what, the characters I become attached to are tragic in some way or die. With the trend in mind, I took what I was that was known and most likely theory about the Evil Queen. From the appearance of it, she does not handle death like the average character or even person. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to bet the first real devastating thing she had to experience was somehow linked to Snow White or Mary Margaret. Often during the first horrible experience, we find some scapegoat to deal with the pain, blaming them or it, however irrationally, on everything. This would explain the seemingly obsessive hatred of Snow White. Second, she obviously since then has been unbalanced mentally since whatever happened, as the weariness of her father might have indicated, this might contribute to her inability to think clearly through the situation. I think adopting a child and moving away from her initial goal was probably an incredibly insightful move to help her emotionally and mentally. However, naming her son Henry was the biggest mistake she could have made. It was said that Maleficent, who I wish would have become a vet or a horse breeder, with her love of the pet and all, that interacting the curse would create a void she would be unable to fill. She's attempted to fill the hole with young Henry to replace her father subconsciously, mm-hmm. and this prevented any benefit whatsoever. She is attempting to heal her heart with what's destroyed. If in the first place, would be drinking poison while sick and expecting to get better. Henry is supposed to replace her father, but since her father was the only person she truly loved, since whatever transpired between her and however directly or indirectly Snow White, he could never hope to compare. Any argument I present, though, would fall on deaf ears since the death of Graham by her hands. I would appreciate any replies, critiques, arguments, or questions on my responding if you have the time. Your fellow fan, Marissa.
Well, thank you, Marissa, for that feedback. And if people want to send in their theories or perhaps additional speculation, that's always welcome. And the address is onceuponatime@sqpn.com. And you can also, of course, use Twitter or our Facebook page to let us know your thoughts. So it's kind of a defense of the evil queen, of Regina. She's not that evil. I think she's pretty evil. And this episode is further proof.
I kind of like, as somebody who studies psychology, I kind of like Marissa's theories, you know? What if you've had a very sheltered life and you don't have your first major loss until you're an adult? How do you deal with it? Or maybe she's just a psychopath. But either way, kind of like it.
Well, there's definitely something heartbroken in her. We know now, after seeing, what is it, more than half of the season, that Well, magic has its price, but every action also has an explanation. So there's always something, a price that people had to pay in the past that motivates them to act the way they act. And I'm pretty sure that for Regina, there is something huge there hidden. And Snow White might not as be as innocent as we think she is. There has to be something that explains why she is so evil and so, you know, completely for. In a way, now that we know that Rumpelstiltskin is so dark because of actually something that he wanted to protect his son, and that is why he chose to, you know, get a hold of that dagger and he became evil. There might be a similar motivation to Regina's actions as well.
Right.
It's this gap in her heart. There's something that she needs to fill, and she's not looking in the right place. There was this theory from one of our followers on Twitter. And our account is Once Upon a Time PC. PC stands for podcast. Who wrote, it's a P2 the Edzo, writes, does anyone else think that Regina could be the Queen of Hearts?
Oh, that's right.
I thought it was actually pretty good. From, of course, Alice in Wonderland. The Queen of Hearts, mm-hmm. Because she's crushing that heart. She has a broken heart herself. Now, I'm kind of fuzzy on the Disney version of the Adventures of Alice in Wonderland. But I do know that the Queen of Hearts is pretty evil and has some characteristics that remind us of Regina. Very, just ruling, well, ruling her.
The Queen of Hearts is tyrannical and she wants it my way or the highway.
But so is Regina. She's very tyrannical.
But do you think that Regina could encompass two queens, like, you know, the queen from Snow White and the Queen of Hearts? I like the theory, but I don't believe it.
I don't know. Well, perhaps they kind of take elements from these two stories and merge them somehow. It's just like with Rumpelstiltskin. It's part of his character comes from the original Rumpelstiltskin fairy tale, but they also mix in elements of Faust and who knows what other, you know, characters. So I don't know. But I thought it was an interesting theory, especially because of the, you know, she's a queen and there are a lot of hearts in her story. So anyway, let's start with the analysis of this episode, True North. And it's a wonderful tale. I'm supposed to play a jingle here, but it's all silent. What's going on here? There's a spell on my iPad. Here it comes.
These stories, classics. It's a reason we all know them. They're a way for us to deal with our world. A world that doesn't always make sense. Believing in even the possibility of a happy ending is a very powerful thing.
So, this story of Hansel and Gretel. Lisa, can you give it a try and try to recap the story? I know it's kind of difficult because it's a story full of details.
It is, and it goes back and forth. I'll start with the Hansel and Gretel. So we open in fairy tale world with them searching for wood, which is very follows in line with the traditional fairy tale, with their father. Their father sends them off to find wood. He gives Gretel a compass, the way it's presented, we know that's going to be important later so that they can find him. While they're looking for Wood, they head back after they're done, and their father's missing. And they hear scream. They run to the road, and there's the Evil Queen's men. She gets out of the carriage. She wants to know why they're there. They try to run from her, and of course she has to show them how strong she is. Anyway, so she says that she will help them find their father if they will do something for her. After a few minutes, they decide they will do that. She tells them, takes them to the blind witch's house and shows it to them. And instantly you realize that's the Hansel and Gretel with the witch. It's made of candy or cookies or delectables. And she tells them she needs to get a black bag in the witch's house, but they have to wait until she's asleep and don't eat anything. And that's the warning that she gives them.
Not even a lick.
Not even a lick, yeah. So they go in, and you've already seen which child is going to be the weaker of the two. And of course, Hansel just can't resist. And he, right as Gretel gets the bag and the witch is sitting there asleep, he licks something.
A blue cupcake, a huge blue cupcake.
She wakes up and the door is locked, the window's locked, and she smells them. And that, you couldn't tell how blind she was, but she smells them, and basically, she chases them around the house, and
there's this horrific scene where you see all the bones of other children in front of the fireplace. It's like, ooh, this is really scary.
All of a sudden, you realize this might not have been a good place to go into. she locks them in this cage, and in what does she keep saying, butter or gravy?
Yeah.
She wants to know how she should serve them, with butter or gravy. And Gretel, being the smart one, she tricks the witch, and they get out of the cage. And in the process, they trip her, and she falls into the oven. And they close the oven door. The evil witch is watching, evil queen, is watching all this in her mirror. And as they shove the blind witch into the oven and shut the door, she sends a fireball, and the blind witch burns up in the fireplace.
It's kind of a predecessor or a magical version of what some people have nowadays with these highly advanced ovens and electrical equipment in the kitchen, where you can just press a key, something on your iPad when you're at work, and your oven starts to burn.
Turn it on. Well, I was nice they didn't have the children burn her up. So that was at least a nice twist.
Yes, yes.
So they go back to the evil queen's with the bag, and inside Evil Queen draws, it's the apple, the snow white apple, the bright red apple. And I think Gretel was a little disappointed they stole an apple. The queen says that the children say, we need to find our father. She said she can help them, but she invites them to live with her, and she will give them everything they've ever dreamed of. They can live in the castle, they can have servants, all this stuff. And the children say no, that they would rather find their father. They don't want all of this because she is evil and a bad person. And the evil queen sends them off. She casts a spell, and we don't know where they go at the moment. So then next time we see her, she has the father in with her. And it's interesting because she asks the father, she says, I gave them the opportunity to have everything. And they turned it all away for you. And what can you offer them that I don't have? And they said they want to be together. And so she sends him off, and then you realize that she sent them to two totally different places, and good luck in finding each other. Yeah. So that family is divided and lost from each other, but they're all free.
Yes. And it's this magic that is stronger than her temptation is actually, the family. It's this bond that they share, and that is, it's more valuable than anything else.
You see the evil queen, her wheels turning, that she wants that and she can't get it.
And she doesn't really understand it because her own family relationships have been more than a little troubled.
Just a little bit. Okay, and in the real world, we meet the children, Ava and I forget the little boy's name.
Nicholas.
Nicholas.
Sorry.
Okay. So they know Henry from school. Not they're different grades. They, you know, recognize each other. And when they Henry's at a store, and we realize that they slip something in his backpack for him to walk out and steal for them, and they get caught. Regina comes down there, and of course says, "Not my child." You know, it must be those children. And so Emma shows up to find out where their parents are and to deal with it. The children convince her of their house, and they were stealing from their parents, and they're sick, or, you know, she takes them home, and she doesn't go in. I mean, she drives off before they go in, and they evidently go in the basement. It's an abandoned house. And of course, Emma, being a little smarter, she catches them and confronts them. And you find out that they have lived by themselves and don't have any children. So of course she brings them, Emma brings them back home to Mary Margaret. And while they're eating and stuff, she tries to decide what to do. And you go through it where you remember Emma grew up in social services in foster care. And so she has a discussion with Mary Margaret about how she really hates to put them in the system. She really wants to try to find their parents first. So you see Emma go to City Hall, says to Mr. K, which I didn't remember that was his name, to look up their birth certificates. And of course, Regina was there first and already has taken the birth certificates. And she sees Regina. Regina says that she's already reported them to social services. The children will have to be split, and Emma needs to drive them to Boston. And of course, Emma anguishes about this because she doesn't want them in the system. So she decides that she is going to find their father, who is not listed on the birth certificate. Oh, and meanwhile, Henry lets her know, because Henry's good at figuring out who everybody is in a fairy tale world. And Henry says, well, it's obvious they're Hansel and Gretel.
Yes.
And you can't take them to Boston because they can't leave.
Mm-hmm. Something evil is going to happen.
Henry confronts Emma about who his father is, and she gives him a story about this fireman that she met and that she never married him, and she went to jail.
Yeah, and a little detail is he always complains that she was working at a restaurant, I think, and then he always wanted to have pumpkin pie.
Oh, that's right.
And
he came in every day to pumpkin pie, and they didn't have pumpkin pie. But she tells Henry that he died saving a family in a fire, so he was a real hero. Let's see. So they have the compass. Ava gives Emma the compass. That was the only thing that her father gave her, which again is another thing that came from the fairy tale world into the real world. So Emma goes and sees Mr. Gold, and Mr. Gold tells her he knows who bought the watch from the compass from him, and he pulls out a record and tells her the name of the person. I think it was Michael. And then we see, after Emma leaves, that Mr. Gold, there was no name on the card.
Yes.
So an interesting point we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. So she finds Michael. He's a mechanic. She tells him about the kids. He debates it. They go back and forth. So, you know, she didn't have a chance. Now she wants to be a parent and she can't. And he says, no. I can't be a dad. So they leave. She is going to drive the children to Boston. Of course, the kids can't leave Storybrooke. So the car breaks down right at the edge of town. And she calls the mechanic to come get her car. He walks up and sees the children in the car, and they talk about it. And he can't let them get away. So they become a family. And as the kids are sitting there in the car, you realize that the compass is moving again.
Yep.
So something else has been healed and is working because of that. So, and the very last thing. Mm-hmm. So Emma and Henry are talking in town, and I think a couple of times in this episode, well, you found out that Emma lied about who Henry's father was. She told Mary Margaret.
Yes, very important.
Henry and Emma are talking about how nobody ever comes into town. Nobody leaves town. It doesn't change. A stranger rolls up on a motorcycle. And
with a very big box on the back, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Just gotta say that.
And she asks his name, and he asks her where to go for the bed and breakfast or something. And there's a big thing about how he didn't give her his name. And so we're kind of left with, who is this person? And how did he get into town? And
I'm dying to tell you my theory, but I can't yet.
Internet movie database, and it says stranger. So they don't even give you a hint what it is.
And what's in that box? What's in that box? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's it. So it turns out that the story that Emma told Henry about his dad wasn't the truth, but she still, you know, he was everything but a hero. But that's all she tells us.
I'd like to kind of negate that just a little bit. And that not that I said, don't think it's the truth. I think there's some details in there that she didn't make up. I think the pumpkin pie, who would make up a detail about pumpkin pie?
You're right.
And I think he was a firefighter.
Okay.
And because I have a theory about that, but
right. we're gonna do the battle of the theories. Excellent. Well, let's play a jingle, and then we're going to analyze the themes and the details in this story.
Glass.
Every story needs a memorable detail.
Oh boy, and did this story have memorable details. Too many to mention. I was taking notes while watching the episode, and this was one of those episodes that I actually think Once Upon a Time does so well, where you have to freeze frame to see all the inside jokes, the details. It's like, what was that? And you rewind, and you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe they put that in the background. So I have my notes. Feel free to jump in whenever I'm forgetting something or you have a crazy theory. But here goes. First of all, we see, and this is not the first time, we see Henry reading comic books, vintage comic books in a store. That's where he meets Hansel and Gretel, at least the storybook counterparts, Eva and Nicholas. He's reading Hulk and Wolverine. And it's still a bit of a mystery why it's always the Hulk. The only kind of pragmatic reason that I can figure out is that Disney now owns Marvel. Isn't that true?
Yes, that's true.
They bought Marvel, and so they actually have the, you know, they can
that's
easily...
That's our brand now, yes.
Exactly. So it's part of the Disney / ABC enterprise, and so perhaps that's a reason. I'm also thinking, you know, in a way, the superhero stories are kind of the modern day equivalent of fairy tales, because they too are all about hope and heroes. And Henry is looking for a hero. He's looking for, you know, and he thinks that his mom, Emma, is the hero. And so it's something that returns several times in this episode. It's like, who is the true superhero? Who has superpowers? And so the Hulk and Wolverine, they both have, in a certain way, superpowers. They are heroes that save the day. And so later on in this episode, there is this conversation between Emma and, I think, the two kids, where she says, you know, I have a superpower. And I was like, uh-huh, didn't we see the superheroes at the beginning of the story? She can tell if someone is telling the truth. And so that is kind of how she is trying to save the day or save these children. So that was my first. And then another aspect of this is those are really vintage comics. They don't look like this at all. So it's another proof that time really stood still in Storybrooke before Emma arrived and has stood still for many, many years. So I thought that was interesting. And then, of course, we've got the shoplifting element of both Eva and Nicholas. They steal sweets, but there is also toothpaste and some other stuff that children wouldn't steal. So you're immediately are they stealing it just for themselves, or is there more here? And then, of course, they try to put it in Henry's bag, and Henry is just so honest and so an unlikely thief that it's clear that they've been trying to steal. Now, this shop owner is called Mr. Clark, and he has a cold, and I am so frustrated that I can't figure out why. Why is he called Mr. Clark, and why has he got a cold? Is that just random? I don't know.
I'll have to think about that. I'm trying to think if there's possibly a Disney character that might have something, or I'll have to do some research.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Sneezy.
Oh,
Sneezy. You're right. Yeah, that must be it.
We haven't seen all the dwarves yet.
He must be one of the dwarves. You're right. Mystery solved. No, I'm pretty positive. That must be it. There you go. That's him. He's a dwarf. All right. Now, about the names, and I'm just going to mix that in right now. We usually have our special segment. But the names are interesting. Ava, of course, is the name of the first people on Earth. Eve, it comes from Hebrew, and it from Hebrew Hava, and it means life. And I think the reason that she's called Ava or Eve in this episode is very important, and it has to do with this whole story about the apple and about, you know, hearts and forbidden fruit, and there's a lot here that's going on here. So I was like, yes, Ava. And then Nicholas, because Adam would be a bit creepy because they're brother and sister. But Nicholas means literally people of victory. And Nicholas, of course, Saint Nicholas, he's at the origin of Santa Claus. He's the patron saint of children, so the protector of children. And of course, Santa Claus has to do a lot with candy. So it's kind of remote, but there are some, you know, there are some references here that make sense. But I think that the Ava is very important as a name. Then we see the compass. Now that, of course, has lent its name to the episode. The compass always kind of helps you find, it helps them find their father. And so it points towards their father, and when they're in the car and the repairman arrives, the compass, even though it was broken, starts spinning again, and it points straight at their father. And of course, that's the true north. That's the true direction in life. That's where you need to go. And that's why ultimately, even though at the end of the story they're thrust into this huge forest, I think they'll ultimately find their father. Because, you know, they're heading for the true north, and the compass will lead them back to what is the most important thing in their lives, and that is basically their family. A family always has to be able to find one another, says their father in the Enchanted Forest. I was wondering about the slingshot that we see Hansel using, and later on Gretel as well. I was wondering, is that something from the original tale, or is it just, I don't know,
well, in the original tale, I think they went to the cottage on their own. So I think adding the evil witch was evil queen. I'm sorry, was that was the spin, you know, the creator's spin. So I don't know, but I think the evil queen, you saw that look in her eye when Gretel used the slingshot, like, oh, you have a fighter's spirit. I like this. You know, this is, yeah. Did she say you remind me of me as a girl, or am I?
You're just like me. You've got a, okay. You've got a strong heart. You remind me
she
of myself.
That spunk.
Yeah. But also that strong heart. That again, it has a lot of meaning, I think. Words like that. I was thinking David and Goliath for some reason with the slingshot, but it's probably too remote of a reference. I like the arrival of the Evil Queen. Her whole wardrobe was very different from what we've seen her wearing before. Very
fancy.
They
went all out this episode with
and
the wardrobe.
The black horse and carriage was almost like the dark counterpart of the white horse and carriage that we've seen with Prince Charming and, you know, this mysterious princess that I still think is the princess from The Princess and the Pea. But anyway, we see the black horse and carriage now. And then we switch back to Mr. Clark's store. Inga in the chat room is like, oh, that must be a reference to Clark Kent because of the comic books. But let's remember Clark Kent and Superman. That's not Marvel. That's DC. I don't know. I still think it's just the sniffles, the sneezy. Everything in the store is vintage. Even the candy bars, but also strangely enough, the toothpaste and the soap. And then I was like, what else is on that table? And so I freeze framed it, and it's so interesting because I think they're inside jokes, because this is the moment that Regina enters the store. You know, the evil queen. She's all dark. And look at the names of the stuff that's on the table there. The counterband that Mr. Clark discovers in Henry's pockets. It's Misty Gel with whitening power. It's like whitening power. That would be good for Regina. And then it's hilltop soap to kind of wash away all that darkness. And then the best one, I had to laugh. I was laughing out loud when I saw this. There's a can of soup. And you know what's written on it, the brand? Hardy what? Soup. It's Hardy Soup. And then, of course, there's another Apollo bar, which is this made-up candy bar from the series Lost. And, of course, the Lost fans rejoiced. Mm-hmm. We switch back to the magic world. I love the way that she imprisons Hansel and Gretel using these roots, these evil roots. And we've seen that before. She's able to command trees and plants and everything. And it's pretty scary. It's almost snake-like in a way, all these roots. Now, the CGI is not always very convincing. There's something you always can tell that there's a bit of green screen involved, but oh well. Shelley, who is not able to join us today, but she is in the chat room, writes, the original Hansel and Gretel story had a stepmother who wanted to get rid of them, took them into the woods to lose them, but they kept finding their way back because Hansel dropped pebbles. Mm-hmm. Until she took them out again, and then he dropped breadcrumbs, which were eaten by birds, and they couldn't find their way back. And that's how they got lost in the forest. So perhaps the slingshot with the pebble might be a reference to that, that he just likes pebbles. Then we get to this conversation that I referenced earlier on, where Emma reveals that she has a superpower. She can tell if someone is telling the truth. And I was like, wow, Henry is very much like his mom, because he's like totally honest and you can see right through him. And everybody can tell if he's kind of making up something. And then there are more details, more freeze frame moments here. When the children finally, and we discover that they've been living in this abandoned house, they unpack the groceries. And what's the first thing that is put on the table? It's honey.
Box of cereal.
Yeah. Box of cereal, honey biscuits. And then there's a tiny little detail. You can only see it if you freeze frame it. And the brand really exists, but it's clearly a pun. The honey biscuits are called Graham crackers. Not making this up. Oh. Graham crackers.
No. Somebody in the prop department has way too much fun.
Absolutely. And then we hear that their last name is Zimmer, which means room. Their mom is Dori Zimmer, and she died a few years ago. I forgot to look up the meaning of Dori. Would that have to do something with gold? You know, something Dori, meaning of names. I'll try to look it up later on. The big underlying trauma, also of the original fairy tale, is of course the separation of the kids, separation from their parents. The separation that was already taking place by the fact that their stepmother, you know, had taken the place of their real mom. And so, and then, of course, the fear of Gretel that she's separated from Hansel, which actually happens at one point because Hansel gets imprisoned. And then in the original fairy tale, there are many weeks during which he's fattened with food because and then they use a little stick to make her believe, believe that he's not really gaining weight, and of course he has. So the blind witch was also part of the original story, but the two kids are separated, and then finally reunited, of course. But that trauma is also the big underlying trauma here in the relationships between the characters, and we learn that it's also one of the big traumas of Emma. You know, she too was separated from her parents and separated from her husband, separated from her child. So, and it's all, you know, what motivates people. She goes to Kraskowski, Mr. Kraskowski. Have we ever seen Mr. Kraskowski before?
I don't remember him. They call him Mr. K, but I've noticed that he's going to be in other episodes. So,
he might be a dwarf too.
Oh, very true.
Could be.
Yeah. I did wonder if they're at City Hall. Wasn't City Hall the one that burned down last week?
Part of it did.
Yeah.
Okay.
But or was it the police station, where the sheriff was?
No, it was the City Hall because it was where Regina's office was.
Oh, then they just fix it up. Perhaps some dwarves helped.
I did find it fascinating that he looks and he's like, oh no, she just took them. You know, like the mayor in all towns just walks in and takes records out of the records room.
Yeah.
So, oh, no big deal.
But he is clearly, you know, handling all the archives and, you know, the keeps record of all the families in the town. And again, with a name like that, Kraskowski, I was like, what does that mean? Is there a reason for that? Of course, it's a name of Polish origin, which is very hard to spell, by the way. It's easier to pronounce than to spell. It is originally from Krzysztof, and of course, it's kind of a derivative of Christopher. And, well, if you know the legend of Christopher, it's about this giant who is helping people cross the river. Because he's so big. And at one point, there is a child standing at the riverside, and he wants to get to the other side. And so he takes the child on his shoulders. And this child is heavy, and really heavy. And then it starts to become heavier and heavier and heavier. And then it gets to the other side, puts the child down. And it turns out that he's been carrying Christ. It's actually Jesus who's been carrying. And so he carried the one who carries everything. And Christopher literally means the one who carries Christ. I don't know if that has anything to do with the character of Kraskowski, but I just wanted to mention it. Perhaps we will get more explanations in a future episode. Now, I noticed again the box on Regina's table with, well, Graham's heart. Would that still be in there?
Well, didn't she put
somebody else's since she had so many of them?
Yeah.
Well, no. I don't think we've talked about this. She got the apple from the satchel.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she put it in the box.
Ah. Those boxes could be more than just hearts. They could be.
That's right.
It could be anything.
Whatever belongs to that person that's valuable, like apples and,
or any other spells. Because in the one of the very first episodes, she makes a reference to Maleficent about. And that was their reference to the sleeping spell. And how my thought was that the apple was supposed to kill Snow White, not allow her to be awoken again. And she made a reference to that with Maleficent, that the spell wasn't powerful enough. Because I think that's where they made a reference. That's where the apple originally came from.
Yeah.
Could be. And we've seen the apple tree in her garden as well. So the apples are still important. It's a weapon. What we don't know is whether she actually has already deployed the weapon or not. She might still keep that apple inside that box on her desk, trying to get back to Snow White, a.k.a. Mary Margaret. So,
now, did you love where she was looking in the mirror and saw Snow White and said,
yes,
like, when
and
did
the dwarves.
You start hanging out with dwarves? Yes. Dwarves? Yeah. When did that happen?
Well, and then it's interesting that dwarves in the fairy tale world are the same size as and Snow White. So they're pretty big dwarves. They're not diminutive at all.
So trolls and dwarves are the same,
Yeah.
And when trolls are full size too.
When are we going to see the ogres? We haven't seen those yet, but they keep talking about ogres. I'm like, I want to see ogres. Are they going to look like Shrek? Anyway, and here we're getting to some very interesting themes. Of course, she wants... the evil queen wants what the blind witch has, which we learn later on is this apple. And then we get this big warning. No matter how you're tempted, don't eat anything. Now, here's my theory. And I think it's more than a theory. I think it's pretty clear what the writers are doing here. They are constantly cross-referencing the story of Hansel and Gretel with the story of the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve. That is, I think, why they gave Gretel the name Eve in Storybrook. Because there is a similar prohibition in the book of Genesis. They are free to, walk around, roam around that big garden. But there is one prohibition. Thou shalt not eat from that tree. there is this one fruit that you shouldn't eat, no matter how tempting it is. The story of Genesis tries to relate something very important, and that is this moral dilemma that we have. We are free. We can choose between all sorts of things. But ultimately, the most important choices that we make in life are the choices between the ultimate good, and ultimately the ultimate good is our Father, our heavenly, it's God, you know, who Jesus calls a Father. So it's love, ultimately. That is the ultimate good. But often we, instead of choosing the ultimate good, we choose for something that is more of a temporary good, like food, like possessions, like something material. And sometimes that leads to disaster. I mean, if you constantly only are making choices to gather as much as you can of those temporal goods, you might lose your soul in the process, and you might forget about the ultimate good, which is God. And so the big drama that happens in the story of Genesis is that even though they have everything and more, there's this wealth of love and goodness in creation around them, they still cannot resist the temptation of eating from that apple. And they are tempted. They're actively tempted by the snake to forget about the ultimate good, which is God, and then pick that temporary good, which they perceive as something that they don't have and they have the right to eat. And so in a way, Gretel here is the one who reminds Hansel constantly about that prohibition. It's like, don't eat it, not even a lick, you know, don't think about it. And it's almost as if Hansel here is like the more she tells him not to eat, the more he is tempted. And the more, and then once she doesn't look, he does bite into that gruesome looking blue 5,000 calorie cupcake.
I just kept thinking, that is not what I would have picked up.
Me
you know
neither.
They sell those at Disney. I'm just telling you.
Really? The blue ones?
Yes. Like, and it is like the M&M. Biggest. It's the biggest wad of like blue frosting, and it does. It turns everybody's mouth blue who eats it. It's really funny.
Oh my goodness. It just really didn't look appetizing at all.
No.
I thought it was something from...
But the kids love it. I mean, every time I go in the bakery at Disney, it's like kids are eating blue cupcakes, so...
That must be
well,
it.
maybe whoever chose the blue cupcake, they have a child and knows that's what they want.
I thought blue food. The next thing we'll see is Smurfs popping up in Storybrooke. But
now, Deborah, didn't you have something you wanted to talk to about the name on the card, or the fact that there was no name on the card?
That's right, there was no name on the card.
Yes,
and
had a theory. And or
that,
something about
my theory is that. Which side is Mr. Gold on? I think he's on the side of Emma, to be honest, because I think he just wants to get back to real, to what is, you know, back home. And so how is he going to do that? By helping Emma, because Emma's the only one that can break the spell.
You think
and
he wants
he to knows, he knows who everybody is. Mr. Gold knows who everybody is. He's just playing along with the queen for whatever reason.
That's true, because Snow told him the baby's name, which is Emma, and he obviously went out and got Henry, mm-hmm. and brought him to Regina. So yeah, he has to know what's going on.
Yeah, well, and how would he have known that these, you know, that Michael would have been the father of Ava and Nicholas? How would he if he's under the spell like everybody else, he wouldn't have known that. But he knows exactly who everybody is and how to pair them up.
Or could he have been involved in somehow in the family story of Hansel and Gretel? You know, we've seen that he was involved in the lives of a lot of children, even in the past, including Henry's. So perhaps mm-hmm. that's how he knows.
And you know, he didn't sell that compass to anybody. He just knew who the compass belonged to. So my theory is he knows more than. I think he's well aware of what the spell is and where he's from. And he's just like everybody else trying to get back to where he's from.
That's so, part of the fascination is trying to figure out what's his angle in all of this.
Yes.
And he never quite does what you expect him to do.
Nope.
And like the feedback you read that was about the evil queen having redemption or soft spot. And we talked about last time with Rumpelstiltskin and Mr. Gold, how you really... Now that you understand his motivation for doing what he's done, you just kind of wonder. I don't know. He seems the most like a Greek tragic character. I mean, all of this stuff happened, but not on purpose to him. And now he's fighting against it, trying to get back.
There's another interesting and perhaps meaningful detail to this conversation. While Mr. Gold is dealing with Emma and trading the name of Michael for a price, because and then Emma immediately gets it, he asks, actually, his wish is, I want forgiveness. At the same time, he's cleaning the oil lamp. And I was like, if you clean the oil lamps, it's usually you make a wish. And he does it right away. He's like, I wish to be forgiven. And then Emma is like, well, what about tolerance? And he says, well, that's a start. And I was like, why is he so... Why does he want forgiveness? Is it forgiveness for... Because he ultimately gave into the dark side. You know, he became this dark one. Does he want to get rid of that? It can be just about the fire that he started to help Emma.
Right.
So there, it's kind of a very deep yearning inside of him. His wish, symbolized by him, you know, cleaning or rubbing the oil lamp, could be ultimately that, like, the thing that he is looking for ultimately is redemption, is to be forgiven for the evil that he did in the past. And he tries to trade his way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's ultimately something you can't buy. It's something that needs to be given to you for mm-hmm. free. That is ultimately, forgiveness is always an act of free will. It's not something you can buy. And I think it's a very important theme here in the overall story arc of Once Upon a Time.
Hey, can I mention one other thing, Mr. Gold's shop? And it's yes. my Disney thing.
Yes.
There's more hidden Mickeys in Gold's shop.
No way.
I didn't go back and watch this. I didn't see any Mickeys.
And this you would have had to. It was very obscure, but I was looking at it and I'm like, those look like mouse ears. And is actually the scissors. He's selling scissors right next to the cash register, and they're all shaped and set up to look like mouse ears.
Oh, how funny.
Wow, I didn't see that.
No, but I'm always looking for the hidden Mickey. So.
You know, we've talked about how time starts moving and how, you know, since Emma got there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think someone mentioned it before. We talked about their hair growing.
Oh.
And in this episode, I mean, I noticed it before, but in this episode, you really can see that Mary Margaret's hair is growing.
Really? Mm-hmm.
It started out, I had to go back and look at the pilot. It started out really boy-cut short. I mean, short. And now it's hitting her ears.
That's interesting because in the fairy tale world, she has very long hair.
Very long hair, yeah. And so the pilot, she had like a boy cut. And now it's growing out. And I thought, well, that's... I guess that's they're visualizing, you know, that stuff is changing.
What about the nails? Are the nails growing too?
Yeah. I was wondering if Regina's is, but I haven't gone back and looked if anybody else's is. I guess because Mary Margaret started out so short, it was
interesting.
Well,
her character is changing all the time, and she's starting to uncover certain things. Because in this episode, and I thought it was fascinating, she has this conversation with Emma, and Emma finally tells her Henry's theory. That Henry thinks that Mary Margaret is actually Snow White and thereby Emma's mother. And then she sees the blanket, the birth blanket, and she seems to recognize it. And then she discards it, but
she's
clearly evolving there. She's starting to vaguely remember things.
I guess that was part of me was hoping if she sat there and she smelled the blanket and you wanted her to have one of those Graham flashbacks, you know?
Yes, yes. Not yet.
You know, where you saw that she had it, something clicked for her. But
yeah. Well, and it was a beautiful scene as well, because this whole episode is ultimately about the strength of family and how much love can bring people together. And of course, in a way, Emma and Mary Margaret, they lost each other. They've been looking for each other for years, and now they finally found each other, and actually they're living in the same apartment. And so that is a family that is reunited it's their strength because they're constantly helping each other. And even the conversation, the way that it was portrayed, where at one point Emma is just lying on the bed, she's almost behaving like a child. And then her mom, Mary Margaret, is just handling the clothes or folding clothes, or very maternal thing that she's doing there. And I was like, wow, that is so funny. That's so cleverly done. But then, of course, the other family is still separated. We learn that the father is called Michael. What was his last name again? Michael something.
Tillman?
Tillman. Tillman basically means a worker of the land. I don't know if that has any meaning. No. The only thing is we see him working in the forest at the beginning of the story.
Cutting wood.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's just basically, you know, someone who's working the land. Next interesting part is, of course, and I thought it was, again, fantastic acting. the conversation between Emma and Michael, mm-hmm. where Emma is trying to convince him mm-hmm. to take responsibility, even though he didn't know that he had twins. It's a great talk about responsibility, accountability. You'll regret it every single day of your life if you don't, you know, act upon this. And it just basically betrays Emma's own guilt and how she felt all these years after having given up Henry for adoption. It just haunted her every day of her life. And I thought it was emotional. It was beautiful. There were several moments here in this episode where I was like, wow, that is great acting. I don't know exactly why she lied and, well, what's true and what's not about the Henry's father.
I have my theories.
Yes.
Okay. I've always said that I thought Emma was Sleeping Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
I know. And some people are like, you can't do that because they've already made reference to her. But the Prince Philip in Sleeping Beauty actually had to, I believe Maleficent set the thorns on fire in the mm-hmm. Disney classic. And so he was actually a firefighter, if you think about it.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh, wow. That is cool.
So I know it's and it's funny because I was as soon as I saw that, I went onto YouTube and I was looking at old trailers of Sleeping Beauty, the original trailer for Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
And I was watching it, and about 50 seconds into this trailer, I hear the king of Prince Philip, the king said, or the, you know, Sleeping Beauty's father says, she's the only one that can break the spell. And it was just a little tiny sound clip.
Huh.
And I'm like, what?
I've heard that before.
Yeah, so it makes my theory just a little stronger that...
Interesting.
That I don't think Emma's being entirely truthful, too, about the character of Henry's father is that something that he might have done that what might have been perceived as a bad thing, but in actuality might have been a good thing. And she's just telling him because she perceived it at the time as a bad thing. So because we don't really know anything other than, you know, they were young. She was a firefighter. He liked pie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie. Yeah. And I know Shelley's in the chat room saying Peter, pumpkin eater.
I was more thinking of pumpkin in Cinderella and the pumpkin turning into, but I don't know. It has a magical sound to it, pumpkin. So it might just be that. back to the whole symbolism of the apple and the heart. There is this the object, of course, that they have to recover from the blind witch is the poisoned apple. And there's this whole play of, you know, the temptation, leave the sweets and the candy alone. It's ultimately, that's not what you want. Your goal is that apple. And if you cave in and take the temporary good instead of what the apple symbolizes, for the children, the apple symbolizes basically their father. It's how they will get their father back, because the evil queen promised that if you give me the apple, I will give you your father. And so... Hansel puts in jeopardy the future of their family by caving in and eating the blue cupcake. When they bring the apple to the evil queen, it has exactly the same color as Graham's heart that she crushed. And so I'm thinking apple, heart, there must be a link here. There must be something that they have in common. And then she adds to that, with the apple in her hand, she tells Eve, you've got a strong heart. You remind me of me when I was young. And I was like, she's telling that to a child who's called Eve. So it's basically, and Eve is the symbol of lost innocence. She was this good person, and then she chose to eat from the fruit. And of course, we, in our iconography, we turn that into an apple, although the Bible doesn't really specify what kind of fruit it was. I always think it was actually potatoes. They eat from the apple. And she's a fallen woman. And in a way, that's the evil queen, too. She might have been good long ago, and then she caved in, and somehow she made a mistake, and it basically, just as Eve brought sin and it affected the entire world, the evil queen giving into the darkness and evil has a similar effect on the fairy tale world, and it corrupts that world and it destroys it. And it needs redemption. It needs a savior. And Emma, in this story, is a savior that hopefully will restore things and will bring back that harmony. But anyway, I think it's very important stuff happening here. In the story of Genesis, Adam and Eve ate the apple. And at the same time, while doing that, they lost God's heart. And so, in a way, eating from the apple, of the forbidden fruit, was literally poison for their own hearts. It poisoned the relationship with God. And in the story of Hansel and Gretel, or actually no, in the story of the poisoned apple, it's kind of the same. It's the apple is it's a weapon. It's something that destroys relationship. It kills, just as sin ultimately kills. And then final thing, and then I'm going to shut up. In some depictions of especially kind of Renaissance and later depictions of Jesus, you see that he's sometimes depicted with an apple in his hands. And actually, I worked in a parish, and one of the churches where I often went, there was this statuette of Mary carrying the infant Jesus, and Jesus carried an apple in his hands. And that is because Jesus is often referred to as the new Adam. You know, what the first people messed up and broke and destroyed, Jesus as the new Adam is going to restore and heal, and ultimately, of course, he reconnects us with God's heart, with God's love, and the apple is kind of the symbol of that. What was first a symbol of death and destruction now is a symbol of redemption. And so I was like, yeah, hearts and apples. Kind of a law. There is definitely a relationship there, symbolically. So she puts the apple in a case, the evil queen, but it's not the same case as we see on Regina's desk. So I don't know. Let's see. I've been on my soapbox here for a while.
Oh, I had Shelley and I thought we're talking the other day about this, and she pointed something out different than the apple. But
okay.
Can Emma actually leave town? Henry talks to her like she can, but we've never seen her leave.
Nope.
Is she now a resident of Storybrooke and, like everybody else, doesn't know her identity and can't leave now?
I think she doesn't want to leave.
The first time she tried to leave, you know, that night she was going to go back to Boston, the wolf jumped out, remember, and caused her to wreck her car, which is how she ended up at jail. So she's... Every other time she's tried to leave, she's had someone with her, a Storybrooke resident. So can she leave?
I don't know. She doesn't want to leave. That's what she actually says in this episode. She says, I wanted to leave him, and then I didn't want to go back, and it's this whole all these words with going back and leaving and getting back and being reunited.
And she also talked about how she can't be with him. She can't be a mom to him. But he had the opportunity to be a dad to his children. And that you could tell the I would say full circle she's come from, with the kid showing up on her doorstep in Boston, to now she doesn't want to leave him. She wants to be the mom.
Well, and you know, talking about the title of this episode, True North, what is Emma's True North? What is her destination? She has found that. It's Henry. This is where she belongs. This is where she needs to be. And so as soon as she drives away from what the compass is, her inner compass is pointing at, then somehow, you know, fate intervenes. And she's not allowed to, because she doesn't belong in Boston. She belongs in Storybrooke, or at least with her child.
She said she moves around so much that she's never had a home, and now she's finally found where she belongs.
Yeah.
And she's got her parents who are her age. Yeah. And
well, that's kind of weird, yes. But you know, there's something beautiful about this whole symbol of the compass, because, of course, a compass works because of attraction, because of magnetism. And so the compass is attracted by the North Pole, the magnetic pole. And in a way, love is very much like that. And a family finds each other because of there is this attraction. There is this magnetic force between the members of a family. And so they will always keep searching, keep looking for each other until the moment that they actually find each other. And that is, I think, what drives Emma. It points her way, and ultimately it's also what Michael discovers once he sees the children. He is just attracted by them, and it's this magnet almost, and he cannot run away anymore. And I thought it was just beautiful. It's just so many great symbols in this episode. There's one final pause freeze frame moment in here, and it has to do with the end of the episode. At one point, Emma is sitting in a car, and she is reading through very old archives with newspaper clippings. And she's actually reading about her own past. She dug up, apparently, some articles about the moment that she was discovered as a child on the side of a road wrapped in a blanket. That's actually what it says in the article that we see. And we just see it for 2 seconds. And then it says in the newspaper clipping, 7-year-old boy finds baby, which is Emma, on the side of the road wrapped in a blanket. And then I was like, why did they show us that? 7-year-old baby or old boy finds baby. Who is this boy? Will we see him later? He must be 7 years older, but that's not too much older. So who is this? And then after that, we see Henry bringing the pumpkin pie, reference to his father, of course. And then right after that, this new guy arrives. Just like Emma, he's new. He's a stranger in Storybrooke. And that is not possible. He needs to be part of the people that are going to change or bring about change in Storybrooke. He doesn't want to say his name. He carries a box on a motorbike. Who is this guy? A name is all you need, says Mr. Gold. Is he? Okay, two possibilities. He is A, Henry's dad. I don't think it's likely because Emma would have recognized him.
He would exactly.
Actually, so. Three possibilities. Second possibility, he is the 7-year-old boy who once found baby Emma on the side of a road. Hasn't seen the child since, so doesn't recognize Emma. But there might be some strange kind of attraction there of, you know. So it could be him. And he seems to be a little bit older than Emma, but not too much older. It could be him. Or the third possibility, and this has to do with our previous episode, could he be Mr. Gold's son?
Oh.
Could this be the boy that he lost? He shows up. And we know that Rumpelstiltskin is a huge factor in this whole story. Yeah. He is actually looking for forgiveness. Is he looking? Who does he want to be forgiven by? Just by Emma? Or ultimately by his son, because he lost his son, he abandoned his son, he betrayed his son. Is that the forgiveness that he's looking for?
And would Rumpelstiltskin's son hold a grudge?
Yeah, who knows? Mm. And what's in the box?
His own collection of hearts. Just kidding.
And could it be a collection for the store or a collection for Regina?
Could be. Or could the box contain the dagger?
Ooh.
Pum, pum, pum. You only need a name. He doesn't want to say his name, but on the dagger is the name of his father. That's all you need. Just saying. Just putting that out there. I want to invite our listeners who have been yelling at their iPod for way too long now with your crazy theories. You know exactly what we're you know, messing up here. We want to hear your theories. We want to hear what you think. And as usual, you can tell us that by going to our website, which is onceuponatime.sqpn.com, by telling us via Twitter. Our Twitter account or handle is onceuponatimepc. So onceuponatimepc. If you follow us there, you'll read our updates. And we are also on Facebook. Just look for Secrets of Once Upon a Time. So three ways in which you can give us your theories and feedback. And then, of course, there's the good old, regular, old-fashioned email. And that's onceuponatime@sqpn.com. onceuponatime@sqpn.com. Lisa, where can people find you on Twitter or on the internet?
The internet. I am at soundmindandspirit.com. And on Twitter, my sister and I, Shelley, are both at soundmindspirit.
Very good. And Deborah, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on my my own podcast at ipilgrimpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Facebook, Deborah Shaven, or you can also find me on Twitter, but I don't check it as much. DisLP38, DisLP38.
Very good. And of course, soon we will have new episodes of The Secrets of Disney, a show that we both host. And you can find that at disney.sqpn.com. And it's part of the StarQuest Production Network. That's what SQPN stands for. And we've got a lot of shows that you might want to check out. We've got Secrets of Harry Potter. Secrets of Tintin, if you've seen the new animated movie. We've got Secrets of the Hobbit, Secrets of Middle-Earth. I do a show called The Break. And then we've got shows like iPilgrim Podcast and The Catholic Foodie and you name it. We've got so many shows. All of them are great. Highly recommend it. We're in the middle of our fund drive, our giving campaign, to try to get the finances to continue our podcasting work. If you want to sponsor a show or you want to support us by becoming a friend of SQPN, you can find all that information on our website, sqpn.com or onceuponatime.sqpn.com. We'll be back, of course, with another episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time very soon, and we hope that in the meantime you'll give us some feedback, and if you have time, write a review on iTunes. That's always highly appreciated. Thanks for your support. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed this, and see you next time on The Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.